What have you done with Spock's brain?
We do not know Spock.
This is Spock. You saw him on the ship. You have his brain.
We just want to talk to somebody about Spock's brain, that's all.
Brain and brain, what is brain?
Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge,
this is Tyler Orton reporting for duty.
And now, for this week's very special conundrum, the best, worst Star Trek episodes.
Well, what exactly does that mean, Cameron?
It means they're the best of the worst. The bad episodes that, you know, we all kind of agree suck. But a lot of us get a lot of joy out of watching.
Okay, because you know what, Cam? There are a lot of like very mediocre episodes of Star Trek where they're just boring to watch. They're a slog.
Yeah.
This isn't the same thing, though.
We are not talking about Man of the People.
No. But there's at least some entertainment value here, right?
Right.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. These are the episodes that are a blast, especially to maybe have friends over, have some drinks, and turn on, you know, some of the wackiest bad Star Trek episodes ever. I think, what's better for a party?
Oh yeah, like we're like, look, you can just watch it and instead of being angry at it, you can laugh your ass off at some of the stuff that's going on. I think this is a great one. Cam, how did you find research for this? Because we all agreed that there'd be a certain number of episodes that we would watch and then comment on. Was this tough for you?
Your initial pitch of me having to do 25 episodes, you know, just proved too daunting.
Mm-hmm.
But I think...
It was season one of Star Trek The Next Generation.
Doing six was actually a good number. And
yeah.
I think I would have enjoyed it a little more just doing research on my own, watching maybe a few or less than three in a row.
Sure.
But, you know, I did it over 2 days and I feel like I got some war stories. I got some insights into some episodes, you know, we've talked about, some we've never really talked about.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really excited to see how this goes. And like, we kind of have a little bit of some extra input today. I actually started a thread on one of the Star Trek fan Facebook groups just asking for other people's picks for the favorite really great bad Star Trek episodes. And this thread proved incredibly controversial.
How so?
I just put up a post saying, everyone, tell me the most fun bad Star Trek episodes. And I just began to get bombarded by the moderator telling me that it was a troll post and that I was going to hurt people's feelings.
Okay.
And I said, oh, I'm not trying to hurt anyone's feelings. I cited two of the episodes I'm going to talk about and said, you know, these are my examples. I would love to know other people's. And I was told, some people love those episodes and you're going to hurt their feelings. It was a lot of drama over nothing because honestly, like the people that contributed to that thread brought up lots of great ideas. It was just like instant, like getting thrashed by the moderator.
I recall you sending me screen grabs from this, and people were kind of standing up for you, mentioning, hey, look, we've had more than 700 episodes of Star Trek.
Yeah.
They ain't all gold.
Right.
You know, so I think that's a totally fair thing. I don't think we're saying, hey, you're a bad human being if you like one of these episodes that we're bringing up here.
I love all these episodes. Like, not all of them, but...
But they were at least all entertaining to watch in some way.
Yes, exactly.
So if we're getting entertainment value of it, out of it, you know, I think that's fine. And Kim, like, I think you mentioned that this deserves a part two. I'm already started on a list for part two at this point.
I have a fan vote that was accumulated through this thread I started that basically has nominated an episode for the next batch because it's not one either of us is.
Okay. Touching. I'm intrigued.
So I thought we would rank them, according to Jordan Hoffman, who, is the film critic who's actually just started his own Star Trek podcast, an official one actually, done by CBS called Engage. Yeah, he shows up at the Vegas Con every year and does the One Track Mind panels. And so,
wait, I thought his podcast was all about how to get married.
Oh, well, that too.
Okay.
That too.
Engage. That's the first step.
But he, a while ago, did an article for Playboy magazine ranking every single Star Trek episode.
That was the same one in which I was featured in the centerfold.
That's horrific. But
I was on a bale of hay.
Well, at least Playboy's clothed now. But so he did an article ranking every episode, including animated with all the rest, like every single official.
720. Well, with the animated two.
Animated two.
Dear lordy.
And he went through and ranked them all through. So what we're going to do is we're going to jump and go from the bottom rungs. And I will tell you right out, there's six. He ranks it at 695. He included the two-parters as a single episode.
Okay.
So the bottom of the barrel with Shades of Grey at 695. But we are going to go kind of down the list. So why don't we jump from 695 Shades of Grey, which definitely not one of the most fun Star Trek episodes ever.
No. That's a good example because that's not what we're doing in this episode. Like, that is a painful episode to sit through.
Yeah.
These quote-unquote bad episodes, they're like campy or there's something just delicious about them that we can laugh at or just be entertained by just by how bad it is.
Right.
It's so, not Shades of Grey.
No. So let's jump from 695 to 692.
Oh, that's not too far down on this list.
This is Threshold, Voyager Season 2. Now, here's what Jordan Hoffman had said. He said, Tom Paris takes a shuttle to Warp 10. This changes him into a salamander, and he then kidnaps Janeway, turns her into a salamander too, and mates with her. Chakotay yanks them away, and they all desert the out-of-space and time offspring down on a bog planet. What the hell?
Yeah, I think when I watched this one for the first time as a kid, what angered me most was that they just dumped the babies on the planet there.
Mm-hmm.
We had the chance to cover this one in biggest WTF moments.
Yeah.
Cam, going back and rewatching this episode.
My second time, yes.
I can't believe I've watched this episode as many times as I have in the last 2 years since we started doing this podcast.
Yeah.
And it's all for research purposes.
Yeah, but no, for sure.
We kind of touched upon this in this WTF episode, but was it not an engaging thing to watch? Even though it was a bit of a train wreck, but was it not engaging?
The first time through, I definitely felt it was engaging.
Yeah.
My revisiting as sort of a, because I feel like if it's a good, bad Star Trek episode, it has to be one that's got replay value.
Sure.
And to
me, it was about 20 years between times that I replayed this one myself. So
now I feel like the first 20 minutes, the pre, you know, breaking the warp 10 barrier stuff is a little dry on rewatch.
It's a pretty standard Star Trek setup. I agree.
Very much.
Although we do get to see Mike Jonas suspiciously looking over at what B'Elanna and Tom are up to. And you're just like, that's of course the mole, the Kazon mole on Voyager.
But everything that comes after that is gold.
Sure. Oh, yeah. Tom in the sick bay yelling about his virginity.
Pepperoni!
Pepperoni! And like begging Kes to kiss him.
He was actually talking to the doctor.
It was unbelievably awkward. And then his transformation starts.
Yes.
Because, of course, he dies.
24 minutes in, and he's reborn 26 minutes in.
It was pretty. And I like how nobody in the entire crew seemed to care that he was dead.
It seemed to go over pretty well.
Yeah.
People didn't really seem too bummed by it.
There's no wake or anything.
No, they weren't shooting him out into space, that's for sure.
Well,
no one was playing Amazing Grace on the bagpipes.
No, and nobody was having a big party in 10 Forward where Riker was playing the trombone, much like at Geordi and Ro Laren's funeral.
Harry Kim was not pulling out the clarinet.
No. That's unfortunate. How did you find the transformation, though, into his giant salamander self, Cam?
I think this episode is really funny. I really enjoy Tom Paris kind of going crazy, and I really actually admired the prosthetics on his head, which makes it pulsate.
Yeah.
What I like, and I think this is going to be something I come back to through this episode, is the great bad episodes are the ones that really commit. Like, they don't, like, kind of do it halfway. Like, some of the, maybe the more mediocre bad ones, like, they just jump off that cliff, like Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, into madness. And this
much
episode,
like Thelma and Louise.
That too.
Yes.
And this one does that. Like, it is so bananas and so weird, but it isn't backing off.
No, even Neelix manages to give Tom Paris diarrhea with his coffee, which was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But look, we've got like crazy stuff going on, like Tom recounting all the time he spent crying in his bedroom growing up. We have, of course, him telling the captain, "You're just jealous of me. You're just jealous." And he's like, "Oh no, I'm sorry. Please come back. You're just afraid of failure." I don't know. Just his transformation into this really petty lizard.
I don't even understand the psychology of the character when this all happens.
I have no idea what the writer was trying to accomplish. I mean, it was touching upon all his insecurities as a human being.
Yes.
We ended up deciding Tom Paris was the biggest bad boy of Star Trek Voyager in an episode we did a few weeks ago. Does Threshold help or hinder the cause?
It kind of hinders it when it's him talking about crying and all this sort of stuff. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I guess he is kind of a bad boy. I mean, he did kidnap the captain.
Sure.
Sure. And that's all I got.
They mated. I do appreciate that Janeway said, "How do you know you were the one that initiated it?"
She took it up remarkably well.
Yeah.
I'd be a little annoyed at the guy who, like, kidnapped me and turned me into a lizard creature.
Yes, you would.
Yeah.
I'll have to meet that guy one day, but we'll see.
One of my favorite scenes in this episode, might be my favorite scene actually, is when he pulls his tongue out.
Yes, I did appreciate that. And then he spends the rest of the time going, "Hello, Captain Janeway."
He has a line where he says, "I'm everything. Let me go."
And did you notice he's sitting cross-legged?
Yeah.
They're just like, okay.
I feel like they were a little inspired by Silence of the Lambs. Like, it was almost like the interrogation scenes or whatever of, sure, like, Clarice and, like, Hannibal. But he was sort of like the Hannibal who'd been, like, had blunt force trauma to the head.
We definitely needed a "it puts the lotion in the basket" scene. That would have, you know, sealed the deal.
Right.
Okay, I'm going to take a little bit of issue with Jordan Hoffman here.
Okay.
So far down the list, number 692, though, yeah, there are so many more episodes I would never rewatch again before Thresholds. Do you think this deserves to be so far down the list? And I know there's so much ire for this episode online, yeah, among fans, but I think this is such a nutty, stupid episode that I didn't have a horrible time rewatching it, Cam.
I agree, because this is in the bottom five. I mean, I'm sorry, if you're going to even talk Voyager, like The Fight or Tattoo, mm-hmm, or Fury are well below, to me, Threshold. Like,
yeah.
Those episodes...
Oh, you haven't gotten to Endgame yet.
No, I haven't.
Anyway.
Those episodes, like, bored me out of my mind to sit through. Or the episode where it was revealed that Species 8472 were, like, living on a holodeck or something.
They,
like,
all went to Starfleet Academy.
Yeah, like, that... Oh, my God. Like, that ranks well below Threshold to me, which I think has at least the... you can admire it for really sticking to its guns. I mean, it goes out blazing, I guess. I mean, I do love at the end when they find the salamanders on the planet, and Chakotay's just like, "I don't know how I'm going to enter this into my log."
Tuvok's like, "I await that log."
Yeah, yeah. Like, I feel like they knew that it was kind of nuts, and they embraced it. So, I mean, okay. I don't know. Like, really hating this one doesn't make sense. I get fans hating it because it doesn't belong within sort of the feel of that universe at a certain point, but I don't know.
I'll say this, because when I first watched this episode, I absolutely hated it. And it wasn't because, you know, I was on, like, some of the Star Trek forums at the time, yeah, you know, and there was hate on it at that time. But it was like when I literally, like, turned off the TV, I was like, I hate this episode.
Right.
So I had that visceral reaction that first time. But it's weird going back and rewatching it and maybe building it up so much in my head, like, just the infamy that it's gained.
Right.
So it's interesting going back and rewatching this. I will say this. This is a thing that is still my biggest problem with it, but the whole fact that Tom Paris apparently is evolving at an accelerated rate, and that is not how evolution works. It really bugs me because, of course, Andre Baramis, he was the scientific advisor turned writer, mm-hmm, who would have been there saying, "Guys, this is not how evolution works."
Well, you know, I think I can think of a movie that may argue against that. And that is called... The movie is called...
Evolution?
No, it's
starring David Duchovny?
That would be amazing, but no. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Out of the Shadows.
Oh.
In which it is revealed that humans have dormant genes which actually connect them to various members of the animal species. This is how Rocksteady and Bebop became a warthog and a rhino.
Makes sense to me.
So...
Thanks,
you know,
Cam.
All these years later, Ninja Turtles 2 picked up this plot thread from Threshold and ran with it.
And it makes sense because, of course, Tom Paris looked like a mutant Ninja Turtle at one point in this
one.
He
did. Actually, he might have looked better considering the CG ones nowadays.
That's true.
And, you know, talking about the fans on Facebook, actually, one of the responders, Mr. Stocks Livban, not real name, I'm guessing, he referred to this episode and said, "I even like Threshold just for how bug nuts stupid the entire premise is."
There you go. I'm with you, Mr. Livstock Bigsnan. I don't know.
Sure. Close enough.
Okay, well, what's number... what's next on Mr. Jordan Hoffman's list here?
Okay, Cam? So we're jumping from 692 to 689.
We're not going far, are we?
We are not going far.
I like how our picks are kind of close to the bottom of the barrel when it comes to, you know, the worst of Star Trek.
That episode is Move Along Home from Deep Space Nine Season 1.
The first time we brought this up on the show, Cameron, it was one of my guilty pleasures.
Yeah, well...
And I still don't quite understand why this is such a absolutely hated, hated episode of the series, but what does Mr. Hoffman have to say?
He says, unlike Spock's brain, which is horrible but somewhat endearing, this is horrible and annoying. Our team is trapped in a deadly board game. And
I love it.
And when Kira does a dopey musical chant, it's enough to make you unplug your television and vow to never turn it on again. Atrocious.
I disagree. You've got Quark crying. You've got Bashir at his most annoying. That, you know, he's literally sitting in this game screaming his head off trying to wake himself from a nightmare.
I was baffled. Like, when that's, because it's a long time since I've watched that episode, and I blocked out most of it, thankfully. That scene, I definitely was scratching my head when it started going, what the hell is going on?
But there's even other great stuff.
Really?
No, well, yeah, I just described that as great stuff. I apologize. But you have Jake, you know, getting frisky with the Bajoran transport ships as he has to ogle all the girls coming right off it. He's into Bajoran fashion now. Mm-hmm. You have that one security officer who says, Constable Odo.
I have him written down. Lieutenant Primin. Yeah.
Okay. So there's some wacky doodle stuff going on here. Maybe it's just nostalgia, but I remember as a kid, like, I liked the idea of the crew being trapped inside of a board game. Cam, why did you hate this episode so much when you first saw it?
First saw it?
Yeah.
Or just watched it?
Tell me.
This is an episode that does not work for me at all.
Okay.
Part of my initial problems, which I think continued into the second, is that what this episode wants to do is create this sort of otherworldly board game the crew is stuck in. Now,
it all takes place on one set.
Exactly. It's one set plus their cave set, which they haul out of the dust balls.
Yeah.
They
don't have to haul it out. It's there every other week.
Like, to me, it just feels small. It feels kind of cruddy. It feels like they didn't really think it through. And I wrote down the Chula, the game they play, is as confusing to follow as sitting and watching me, you, and Ben play Fleet Captains.
Oh, dear. That's a three-hour ordeal every single time we attempt Fleet Captains.
Yeah, and I don't know. Like, I just never felt the sense of fun. Like, there's, like, 15 minutes of this episode is them, like, messing around in a cave.
Okay, but, like, for, like, the silliness factor, you've got Quark being enticed by the crappiest-looking gems I've ever seen.
Yeah.
You've got the Wadi banging on these little pretzel sticks
I was amused by that. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I like the alien race because they were, the Wadi, they were so stupid looking. Like, you could tell that, like, they really took the day off. Like, Michael Westmore and his team were just like, just put some paint on their face. Good enough.
Yeah. Well, what did you think about that cave dive that they all took at the end? Was that not the worst looking cave dive ever?
It was pretty bad, yes. Yeah. It was pretty clunky. To me, part of the other problem with this episode is, like, I don't expect an episode like this, which is obviously high concept and goofy, to be, you know, like, scary or suspenseful, but I never felt the crew was in any danger.
Not when they were doing hopscotch?
I mean, that felt like it was ripped out of Nightmare on Elm Street. another movie that actually had a very low budget, and, like, every nightmare sequence is in a boiler room.
Yeah.
It was a very similar sort of feel, but I don't think this was trying to take homage to that.
Okay. But what about great lines from when Dr. Julian Bashir, like, Madam, this is no laughing matter. You know, there's so many hilarious... Oh, okay.
I wasn't laughing at the time.
Did you laugh at anything, though? Did you get... Okay, because here's the thing. Listeners, Cam and I, we each picked three episodes. This was one of my picks here. I needed something for DS9 to be represented by.
And right.
We had some discussions. I think Deep Space Nine was the toughest series to comb
by far. I didn't even attempt it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is the best that I could come up with. Was there at least some sort of factors where you could just kind of laugh at it?
There was, but it didn't relate to anything that really... is tied to the central plot, and that is in the opening when Jake is talking to Sisko about women or whatever.
Yeah.
And he's kind of like, I know what I need to know, and he tells his dad that he learned it from Nog, and Sisko's reaction to that I loved.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, he's just like the biggest eye roll.
He's exasperated.
I it's just like, I like that it's still that point in the series where he doesn't like Nog.
Well, we'll have to track. Okay, we've done the psychology of Geordi Forge. We'll have to track, like, the arc of Nog one of these days.
Yes.
But
let's, I just want to break down this game of Chula. Let's talk
about
some of these
it's
rooms.
Not worth it, Cam.
Because, okay, so we have the room where they have to do the hot scotch. I'll give you that one. It's a simple puzzle, but fine. Fair enough. What the hell is with the smoky room party where it's like everyone's choking, like, all the players start choking on smoke and you have to, like, drink the glass that has been served to you? Like, what kind of genius does it take to figure that one out?
Well, as Bashir pointed out, you know, he had nothing to lose if he tried, like, the champagne that they were serving.
Yeah.
So.
And this is, like, an enhanced guy it took to figure this one out.
Yeah, he's genetically altered. And
like, to you, like, does this take any problem-solving skill whatsoever?
No.
And okay, so, you know, I think if you look at the smoky room and also at the hopscotch game, to me, like, very, very simple puzzles that, frankly, an idiot could figure out. But when we get to the third cave one, what is the point of the cave scenario?
You're supposed to abandon somebody, and they refuse to abandon Jadzia in that case. So that's why they ended up losing the entire game. So I figured it out. I would have beat you at Chudlo.
What if there's only one person in the cave?
Then I don't think that scenario would have appeared in the game.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cam, believe me, I'm a master at this game. Don't even try.
What did you think of the science of the game? Because that to me just doesn't work. Like, where it cuts from, like, Sisko in his bed to, like, Sisko in the board game. You know, if you give me one shot, just like an insert shot of the aliens, like, slipping something into Sisko's pocket or something, like some sort of transmitter that's going to beam him into the game, I'm like, okay, I buy it. It's okay. The fact that nothing like that is ever established that I had real problems with.
Well, I think Odo and the security officer had mentioned that there's some sort of transporter beams involved.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
You know, I don't know.
It seems
Cam, okay,
clunky.
You're getting hung up on all the wrong stuff here. Let me just say this. Was this, like, painful for you to watch? And if so, I mean, like, admit it. To me, I enjoyed watching this one.
Painful?
Well,
no.
Enjoyed. I don't know if I use that word correctly, but it wasn't a slog to get through.
Right. Okay. I found the. Frankly, I thought it really stops dead once you hit the cave.
Sure.
I think everything.
I won't argue with that.
Yeah,
I...
it just drops. But in terms, I kind of like how Kira's angry at this point in the
series. Yeah.
Like, I'd forgotten about Kira at that point, being, like, really annoyed by everything. So I kind of enjoyed her in there.
She's like, you dumb explorers, I'm just an administrator. I'm sure you guys are enjoying this, but I'm not. You know, this is not what I signed up for. She literally said that. I loved actually watching Odo do his job and be good at it.
That's a good point. Yeah, I really enjoyed Odo in this episode.
Yeah.
And Quark.
So there are redeemable qualities.
There are. I just think if you're going to talk DS9, this definitely ranks at the bottom, but not in a way where I'm like, I get a lot of enjoyment out of watching it.
You're dead to me, Cam.
But at the same point, I give you props for nominating a DS9 episode because God knows there's not a lot to choose from.
Well, and that's, just for listeners, I mean, that's the struggle with this particular topic because we're not talking about bad episodes. Because believe me, there's episodes like The Muse, Miranda, Time's Orphan, which, like, I find those ones painful to watch.
And Prophet and Laces,
Oh, Prophet and Laces, like, that
it's just a dog.
Yeah, but, so that's not what we're talking about when, like, best bad episodes. We're talking about episodes that are so bad, they're good to watch,
right.
You know? Cam, I take it you don't necessarily quite put Move Along Home in that category, but this is the best that I could come up with Deep Space Nine.
I give you points for, you know, taking a swing at one of them.
Okay, well, let's see what's next on Mr. Hoffman's list.
Okay, so we jump from 689, Move Along Home, to 620 with Sub Rosa.
Oh, well, that is quite the jump, and it's for one of my favorite episodes ever.
Right, Sub Rosa from Season 7, and Jordan Hoffman says, Dr. Crusher versus Scottish space ghosts in what feels like a holdover from Dark Shadows.
Well, Cam, I think the best way, you know, it's great that Mr. Hoffman has his description, but why don't we reenact a scene? We have a transcript from the episode here. Cam, why don't you play Troy?
Okay.
And I'll play Crusher.
It's the role I was born to play.
Go for it, Cam.
Okay, so set is, we're in 10 forward, right? Okay. You dreamt you were in bed with someone?
Not exactly. I was in bed, but there wasn't another person in my dream. It was more like a presence.
You said you felt a touch?
A pair of hands. They were moving across my skin.
Like a caress?
Yes, and there was a voice. A man. He whispered my name. It was as if I knew him, or more like he knew me. He knew exactly how I liked to be touched. It was the most physical dream I've ever had. The sensations were very real and extremely arousing.
Frankly, I'm jealous.
I did fall asleep reading a particularly erotic chapter in my grandmother's journal. She wrote a very detailed description of her experience with Ronan.
Well, that's bound to cause a dream or two. So shall we start going over the
personality? You know, I think he had a ring on one of his hands when he touched my shoulder, my neck. I wonder if I'll have another dream tonight.
I'd read two chapters.
Thank you. You know, send us, you know, the Oscars later on. Oh, yeah. You know, we're all good for it. Cameron, you were very skeptical of me when I sent you this episode as an assignment to watch, because I know it was kind of painful for you to watch the first time, was it not?
Yes.
But knowing that Tyler was cracking up at this episode, because I had recently watched it for our Weirdest Romances, our Valentine's Day episode.
Right.
And I was in awe. I had not watched it since it first aired in 94, 95. And so it's been more than two decades.
Yeah.
And I was laughing my ass off the entire time at everything going on here. What was your reaction?
I enjoyed it a lot more the second time.
Good, good. It would have been great if we watched it together, because we would have had tears in our eyes.
Like, oh, yeah. I mean, there's so much terrible dialogue. I mean, it's really, really bad. I just love, like, her talking about the remarkable look she got from Ronan. Or Picard talking about, like, the libidos of the Howard women.
Yeah. Or, do you know how you know it's science fiction?
Mm.
Her 100-year-old grandma has a 30-year-old boyfriend.
35. Although I looked up the actor, he was 41.
I believe it.
Because he looked a hell of a lot older. I was looking at him going, like, this dude is not my age.
He was still a good-looking chap, though.
Was he?
I thought so.
You see, I really... One thing.
Well, maybe that's why I played Crusher in that scene, Cam.
One thing we're going to talk about in this episode is there's a number of episodes we're going to hit which are basically kind of like romantic fantasy episodes to a certain degree, or at least just sexual fantasy episodes. I think it's interesting to look at how the writers portray this sort of thing. And because I think what we're going to hit on with at least this episode of the podcast is that they all do it wrong.
Yes.
In the ones we're going to name. Sub Rosa is an episode I feel bad about kicking. Because
we're not kicking it though, because we were entertained.
But we're ridiculing the very thing it's trying to sell.
Yeah.
Which, and the reason I feel bad about that is because there are so few shows that present an erotic scenario for, like, aimed at women at this time period.
Yeah.
Right.
And we have also complained that Star Trek is very stuck up when it comes to addressing sexuality.
Yes.
And then when they finally go and try to do it, we're giving it a hard time.
Right. And there's also just the fact that I think. If, say, like, women would roll their eyes at a men's sexual fantasy, like, we would look at them from different points of view. However, you know, this was written by Brandon Braga, so I feel like it opens it up a little more to criticism.
But I think, didn't Jerry Taylor write the actual story?
She wrote the story, yes.
Yeah, I do suspect that, you know, you can kind of tell when a man is writing for a woman in a lot of these series, and I definitely think that a lot of this was, you know, Jerry Taylor's, like, words.
For sure.
Like, I don't think this is coming from Brandon Braga's
head. I like to think it is.
Okay.
And we will get to an episode later in the show that actually is a male fantasy written by a female writer. So that'll be interesting to kind of compare and contrast the two.
Okay, well, what about the non-sexual stuff here? Because let's talk about...
Oh, God, the rest of it? I don't know.
No. Let's talk about one of the first scenes in which Crusher and Quint are literally fighting over a candle, like, pulling it back and forth from each other.
Yeah.
Like, that was hilarious. There's other, like, the climax of it where zombie Nana comes back from life. She's a reanimated corpse, and she's shooting lightning bolts out of her hands at Geordi and Data.
To be honest, though, that was my least favorite part. Because I feel like...
You weren't laughing, though?
I laughed at the grandma waking up, for sure.
Okay.
But I feel like...
You're not my Nana!
Within Gothic literature, there's kind of some tropes you gotta follow. And this one of the ones I'm willing to overlook, which is the fact that usually the supernatural elements are actually more of a warning about a sort of a more earthly evil.
Okay.
That part, whatever, I'm willing to overlook that. But it's the sense that, like, when you build to a climax, usually things, it's kind of like... Everything goes insane. Like, it's the huge ending. Whereas I don't feel the TV budget of, you know, season 7 TNG was willing to allow for a very impressive finale.
Well, the set was pretty impressive.
That's fine, yeah. But I just feel like, you know, kind of just like Ronan just getting shot with a phaser is pretty underwhelming.
Sure.
Considering, like, all... Because it's kind of like, you know, the whole episode is kind of about this buildup of tension, right?
I know what
you're
you
supposed
want.
To explode at the end.
You wish that Crusher lit his hair on fire and he burnt away like a candle.
Sure.
That would have been good special effects right there. Well, okay. And I kind of feel bad about doing this because I'm going to give props to Gates McFadden for performance, throwing herself in there.
Yeah.
Do you think she was almost given kind of an impossible task with kind of the script, though? Like, she's given lines that are among the worst ever in Star Trek, right?
Yes. Oh, I mean, well, I mean, anyone who has a major speaking role in this, definitely. But, yeah, I mean, she has to sit there and kind of sigh and be like, I can see why Nana fell in love with him.
Yeah.
It's like, ew. Like, there's an inherent ickiness to this episode that I don't think it is ever able to overcome even close.
What do you think about Jonathan Frakes directing in this one?
I mean, he's fine.
Yeah.
He does what he can.
Like, I did notice some flourishes that he was throwing in there. Yeah. I just don't know if there's much he could do to salvage an episode like this.
Yeah. I mean, this is high camp material.
Oh. Do you think this is the campiest Next Generation gets from season 3 onward?
I think so.
I have to believe it is. Like, I can't think anything else that comes close. Otherwise, it would have probably been on my list.
Yeah, yeah, oh, for sure. Yeah, it really is, I think. And, you know, I do give it, like, points for committing like I did with Threshold. Like, my God, I don't know what they were doing. And, you know, they did that a couple times in season 7 because they did that with Masks, too, where they just, like, they all went off the cliff together. And I admire that, but it's... It's an episode I'm so conflicted on because I really enjoy chunks of it, but parts of it are just so stupid that I just, like, I can't even...
Well, what about when Ronan his voice first appears to Crusher and he's saying lines like, I love you, you are beautiful, and, like, that's enough to make Crusher fall in love with him?
Yes.
It's just, like, and of course she's under the influence, you know, of this life form, you know, but it's...
Which leads to the amazing exchange of... I'm going to become part of you. Would you like that, Beverly? Oh, yes. More than anything.
But there's even other... But there's other stuff, like when Picard confronts her in the transporter room she already says energize once, and then she's like, Jean-Luc, I resigned my commission. Energize! And then transporter chief does nothing. Yeah. It's like, there's just stuff to laugh at, like, nonstop.
Picard walking in on her.
Oh, yeah.
She's having one of her romantic sessions with Ronan. Yeah.
Okay. This has to be one of my favorite campy episodes of Star Trek of all time.
This is a Star Trek episode that the climax is pulling a coffin out of the ground.
Wow. Okay. So, Cam, if we ever do, like... a bonus episode commentary or something like that. Yeah. Like, I urge listeners, like, you may not be a fan of Sub Rosa, but if Cam and I do a commentary on this, it'll be entertaining. You will be entertained.
Sure. You know, it is funny, though. You and I have had some real bickering back and forth about sort of canon and me kind of prodding you about the animated series, right?
Yeah.
I just love that, you know, you'll throw down the gauntlet that, like, that is not canon, but you're willing to accept that 8 generations of the Howard women all fell victim to a magical candle.
Yes. It's science fiction, Cameron.
That's insanity.
Okay. Well, what's next on Mr. Hoffman's list here?
Okay, well, let's jump from 620.
Wow.
To 542.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, this is the episode Favorite Son from Voyager Season 3.
Okay.
Here's what Mr. Hoffman has to say. He says, Harry Kim and a planet full of space hotties. This episode does have its merits. One must confess.
Sorry, a planet full or a very small room full of space hotties, Cam?
Well,
were the production values of this episode like?
Not much. Okay. Move along home level. The reason I nominated...
Minus the cave. It didn't even get the honor of a cave.
It needed a cave. The reason I nominated this episode is that I think Favorite Son... You know, we were just talking about sort of female fantasies gone awry in Star Trek. This is male fantasies gone, hilariously awry.
Yes.
And it's also... I'm going to tell you, a lot of it came down to the performance of Patrick Fabian.
I totally have him all over my notes. Okay, for listeners that don't know, Patrick Fabian, he's been great in Veronica Mars, Better Call Saul, Saved by the Bell, The College Years.
He's actually fantastic. There was a found footage horror movie from a few years ago called Last Exorcism.
Okay.
Where he plays a sort of conflicted priest who goes to investigate an exorcism. Really good movie, and he's fantastic in it.
He's one of those actors that I see a lot. He's very much a character actor, and there's just some charisma about him.
Yeah.
But his performance in this, it's like the swagger.
It's like douchey frat bro cranked up to 10. There's a moment where Harry Kim is kind of being caressed or whatever, and it cuts to him just doing this, like, finger, like, keep going.
It's just, he's, oh, yeah, I have that in my notes as well. Yeah. And just his facial expressions, the smiles. He's essentially like a merchant marine.
Yeah.
He's just like, yeah, I was always called into outer space. This is why. Oh, yeah. He's very much kind of Disco Stew.
Right.
You know, I dug Patrick Fabian's performance in this. Hopefully, look, if they can reanimate the corpse of Nana,
yeah,
maybe they could reanimate this corpse and bring him back for Star Trek 2017.
Yes, they just have to put some moisture back into his mummified body.
Okay, so what are some other highlights of this? Because I have highlights in my brain right now, but this is one of your picks, Cam, so I'll see if there's something you want to share first of all.
This was the one I referred to earlier. It was written by a female writer, Lisa Klink.
Yeah, she's actually like one of the more prolific writers on Star Trek Voyager, at least for the first, like, I'd say the first half of the series.
Yeah, for sure. She did write, quite a few in 2, 3, and 4.
Yeah.
Seasons 2, 3, and 4. We often talk about, is this true to what Roddenberry sort of, you know, established with Star Trek when he created it? This is very true to sort of the more porny aspects of Gene Roddenberry's things, you know, where the original series had lots of, like, beam down to a planet, there's, like, sexy women there. This is that, but filtered through the sensibilities of Voyager.
Yes.
And that, to me, is a match that does not go well. And so you get all these awkward scenes of, like, Harry Kim, like, tying up women, and it's really weird.
And then bludgeoning them with, like, a very, very heavy object.
It's just, like, it's bizarre. There's this sort of S&M component to this planet, which is the planet Tiritzia. And, like, when the men get married, they all get tied up and blindfolded. And it has this very, like, light S&M, sort of 50 Shades of Grey type thing going. It's just so, like, trying to be suggestive and sensual in primetime television, but it feels so cheesy.
Well, okay, my highlight here was the climax of the episode in which Harry Kim is in a stick fight with the entire planet.
They're beating him with sticks?
Yeah,
he's
got like a bamboo shoot and he's like defending himself and like smacking women in the face with his bamboo shoot.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my god. And it ends with him escaping through a transporter beam.
Yeah, that
is very unsatisfactory.
It is. Like, I would like to see a, you know, follow up to where another race goes to that planet or something.
Okay, Brian Fuller, Star Trek 2017, take us back to Tiritzia. We're all for it. But, okay, this is one of the issues that I have with it. This goes beyond the camp factor and just to one of my criticisms. What does this eventually tell us about Harry Kim as a person? Is there really any overall, like, what is this episode about, Cam?
I don't know, because it ends with this little bit with him saying he wants to be more like Tom Paris. And Tom Paris
says, I am Tom Paris! I have no tongue!
And Tom Paris says, I wish I was more like you. I'm like, okay, I don't...
Yeah, he likes taking bamboo sticks and smacking people with them.
I mean...
And tying them up in the bedroom.
To me, this is an episode that is almost like, you know, we've talked about Geordi LaForge's awkwardness with women. We talked about that a lot in our Psychology of Geordi episode. This has a lot of moments like that with Harry Kim, which are so awkward that they become comic gold. Like, I love when the woman tells him to get into bed and he's like, are you going to tuck me in?
Yes.
And then he proceeds to tell her about how parents tuck their children in and, like, tell them stories.
What did you think of Harry's mother? Like, because, okay.
Yelling at him about chicken pox?
Well, yes. I'll just say this. We're from Vancouver. Like, there's a sizable Asian population here.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's a stereotype to say that the whole idea of an Asian tiger mom exists. Mm-hmm. It's observable here in Vancouver.
Right.
So, Harry's mom seems to be the quintessential Asian tiger mom.
Yeah.
Do you think it's great that they're falling on that particular trope in storytelling? Like, of course he has to have this really demanding mother, you know? Like, it just kind of irked me. I was like, really? Like, there's no other mother figure that Harry Kim could have?
Yeah, I mean,
I'm not saying like Asian tiger moms don't exist, but I'm like, okay, you've got like look, Garrett Wong would have been one of maybe like five Asians total that had starring roles on a TV series in the 1990s.
Yeah.
And of course, he's kind of like, they still find ways to like plug in these stereotypes.
Well, I mean, we've talked in the past how they didn't really have a very good grasp on like cultural sensitivity at this point when they're writing Harry Kim.
No.
So I'm not that, like, honestly, that didn't even really faze me because it's like, yeah, that, I mean, it seems like television of the 90s.
I thought it didn't faze you because you're a racist.
Well, that too.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm glad you admit it.
But, you know, this was an episode a while ago when because I am still working through Voyager. I've just finished season 6. But when I got to this episode, I texted you and was like, how did you never tell me about this episode?
You know, I think, as soon as you texted me, I was like, oh yeah, this one.
Yeah.
I think I kind of wiped it away from my memory because honestly, I hated it at the time.
Right.
It was amazing to go back and watch this though.
So you enjoyed it much more.
But I have to admit, let's bring it back to Patrick Fabian.
Yeah.
He sucked me into this one. Like one of the best guest stars, one-off guest stars for such a thankless role.
Yeah.
For such a thankless role, he brought so much to it though. Mm-hmm. Like I was so impressed with him.
I mean, the comedic value to me in the episode comes from two things, which is Harry Kim's awkwardness. And Patrick Fabian just, like, mugging.
Oh, no. The other great comedic value here is Tom Paris and how every single woman ignores him on this planet.
Yes.
And, like, he just can't figure it out. And I think that's why, by the end of it, Tom's like, I wish I was more like you, Harry.
Right. So, now, what do you think of from the point of view of, like, a male fantasy being written by a female writer? Does this feel, like, compromised in that way? Or is it just a bad episode? Or what's your take?
No, this is my fantasy. I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, she got everything right.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Got no complaints.
No complaints.
No.
Your thoughts?
Well, you know what? I don't think she did it, you know, very well. But let's talk about an episode.
What are your fantasies? Share with our listeners, Cam.
Well, you know what? I'm going to sum it all up when we move into our next episode.
Ooh. Okay.
So let's
what's next on the list?
From 542 to 533. That is the episode Bound. From season 4 of Enterprise.
Okay, so I'll just give you my like take on this like from a few seasons or a few years ago. I brought this up on the podcast before. Season 4 of Enterprise, I was totally a fan of the show by this point.
Mm-hmm.
But leading up to that, you know, my girlfriend, she had heard me complaining about it. And she sits down, and this is the episode that she sits down on the couch to watch with me.
Right.
And we're watching it, and she's like, I can see why you've always hated this series. And I'm like, no, I swear to God, I love it now. And she's like, you love this? And I'm just like, no, like, wait.
Yes. Yeah.
So, Cam, this one really bothered me, but you were a big fan of it. It was among your guilty pleasures, correct?
Right.
Okay.
I have a more favorable opinion than Jordan Hoffman, who had this to say about Bound. He said, Orion's slave girls run amok on the Enterprise. Despite some lip service against it, this gets a tad sexist. A misstep.
This is the word that I'm going to use. Mm. And I can understand why. Look, it's going for the camp factor.
Yeah.
It totally has it. But this episode is still very problematic in kind of the depiction of like gender relations.
Yes.
So, but go on. I want to hear why you are defending this as one of the best of the worst. Because here's the thing. It's still a fun, bad episode to watch, right, no matter the issues I do have with it.
One of the things that makes this so much fun for me is I'm an original series guy. That's my favorite of the Star Trek series. And I love sort of that show just so expertly mixes like camp with kind of these really out there ideas. And this episode is Enterprise doing that. Now, Enterprise would do it more successfully in its two-part Mirror Universe episode.
Sure.
But I think, like, I get so much enjoyment out of this episode because I can picture Kirk and crew in this episode.
Yeah, it really does seem like a throwback to the 60s, which I watch a lot of those original series episodes, and those I would describe as problematic.
Sure.
As well. There are far more episodes that are not problematic, you know, from the original series. Let's just get it out of the way. I mean, like, the whole issue of, you know, slaves, this gender relationship, and we finally have this reveal at the end. Of course, you know, these Orion slave girls, they come, try to take over the ship using pheromones.
Yeah.
We've got issues with, like, all the men are into the women because of pheromones, whereas all the women get headaches.
Right.
There's issues.
That's how you numb the competition.
Yeah, well, that's what Phlox explains. Although I do have to point out, Phlox on stimulants in this episode is pretty amazing to watch.
I think Phlox is a lot of fun.
Oh yeah,
and of course it rips out of the happening that true love triumphs all. You know,
that's true.
T'Pol and Trip aren't susceptible because they both are in love.
That never made any sense to me because
it makes none.
They had some sort of psychic connection that had physiological impacts on Trip.
It's that amazing Vulcan physiology.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm not going to argue with that.
Yeah.
But my issue here, though, is just like it essentially says that there are no gay people on the Enterprise. And if you are gay, that means these pheromones are enough to make you go straight.
Right.
That to me really irked me quite a bit watching this one.
I was always willing to overlook it because it is so odd, so obviously and blatantly trying to kind of mirror original series.
Yeah.
Where original series always kept it simple, and this episode keeps it very simple. It doesn't throw in complications.
I know, and here's the thing. Yes, it would have been far harder to try to explain. Well, some of the crew members aren't having this because they're homosexual, blah, yeah. blah. And the thing is, let's be honest, Star Trek has one of the worst track records ever when it comes to depictions of LGBTQ. So, you know, like, what are they really going to start with an Orion slave girl episode?
Exactly. Like, Orion slave girls run amok on the ship being sexy. Like, yeah. Is that really going to be the episode where they're going to do something like that? Probably not.
Do you think that there's an undue amount of pressure on Brian Fuller to introduce, you know, like, kind of the LGBTQ elements into the next Star Trek series, as like he's a gay, openly gay man himself, and I wonder if he's even just going to resist that just because he doesn't want to. I don't know. Like I think it's Star Trek has always been very, as mentioned before, like very stuck up when it comes to dealing with sexuality. There are some episodes like Rejoined or The Outcast that do touch upon it, but I wonder if Brian Fuller is worried about taking flack for putting it so front and center, or I don't know. What are your thoughts?
You have to have a gay crew member.
I think by this point you have to.
It's not even a question to me.
Yeah.
You know, Star Trek has always been forward thinking, and you know, now they're being backwards thinking. You know, to have like, you know, Uhura on the bridge in 1966, and to still not have a gay character in like 2016 is absurd. It has to happen. I kind of, you know, I'm not a big fan of like studio pressure. But I do hope CBS is like, we have to do this.
I even wonder, you know, we're going off on a bit of a tangent here, but I think it's relevant to our conversation going on right now. But Cam, you watched the first season of Hannibal. I'm not sure. It's been a while since I watched season one. But I mean, I know for a fact there are gay main characters in the series.
Yeah.
But the homoeroticism, like between Hannibal and Will Graham throughout it's not like this very blatant, like homosexual relationship between them, but there is certainly homoeroticism.
Yeah.
Do you think, I don't know, Brian Fuller would maybe leans more towards those kind of depictions of it? Is there room for homoeroticism in Star Trek?
There's definitely room.
Let's just, Kirk and Spock. I mean, think of all the slash fiction.
There's a long history of, slash fiction and fan shipping. So, I mean, I don't see why not. To me, like, yeah, there's definitely room. The question is, like, I don't think you need that to get it across. I mean, when they put Uhura on the bridge, it wasn't like they had all these episodes about the fact it was a black woman on the bridge. It's just representation is the important part to me.
Yeah, I absolutely 100% agree, because I think what all you need to do, though, is, like, have a crew member there. Like, look, there's, like, a woman, you have a picture in her room, and she's like, oh, yeah, that's my wife. And it's like, there it is. You know, and because
we don't need very special episodes.
No. And
if you want one, if it demands it, you know, from a point of view of telling a good story, go ahead.
Yeah, but you know, but a very special episode, I think, would be a misfire in this particular instance here. We went off on a bit of a tangent, an interesting one nonetheless, but let's get back to Bound.
Because Bound is a ride, and let's cut to a scene that I think makes this a camp Hall of Famer, which is a scene in the Enterprise gym between Reed and Mayweather.
Cam, the first time you brought the scene up on when Star Trek Gets Sexy episode, our first Valentine's Day episode, I was in tears laughing, but you explain this.
Well, I've prepared a scene here that we are going to act out now.
Oh, I had no idea, but okay.
So I will play the role of Mayweather, and you will play the role of Reed. So this is just for a little bit of setup. This is after, you know, the Orions have arrived on the ship. The crew's all hot and bothered, going a hummina, hummina, hummina. And then we cut to the gym where Mayweather and Reed are working out.
Well, I'm just going by memory, but I'll do my best here.
Okay.
Have you seen one yet?
I ran into one of them in the corridor. They're really,
yeah, I know. What are you trying to do?
Get him on my head. The pain helps. You should try it.
Yeah. Okay.
When I was on my parents' ship, we picked up some Deltons once. The ship was having engine trouble.
I don't know that species.
The females are unbelievably attractive. Very open about. I was 15. I couldn't think straight. I could barely breathe. One thing that got me through, it was weight training with my dad. He said if I was exhausted, idle hands and all that.
Well, did it help?
Helped my biceps. I'd go heavier. This is one of the all-time great exchanges in Star Trek history. I don't care. You can pull out the greatest moment between Kirk and Spock, and it does not compare to Reed and Mayweather lifting weights to take their minds off of these Orion women.
It's weightlifting instead of masturbating.
Right.
Essentially, okay.
Idle hands and all.
Yeah. Idle hands and all. Yeah. You know what? Next time there's an Enterprise panel in Las Vegas for the big convention, we just need to go up with the script and read it out for those actors. And.
But, you know, let's talk a bit about the Orion three girls here, because I love the way they're introduced. That music, they have like a dance scene that is one of the cheesiest dance scenes humanly possible, with music that is like, you can tell it was like license-free music.
Yeah, it really seems as if I saw this scene a million times in 1940s films.
Right.
You know, with the belly dancers, they're like, ooh, look how exotic they are.
It feels a little bit like Wolf in the Fold from the original series.
Well, Cam, you do have an experience with one of these Orion slave girls.
Oh, yes, yes.
Tell listeners about it.
Yes, so I met Saya Batten last summer in Las Vegas. We talked about this in our Las Vegas podcast, but for those who didn't listen to that one, here's that sort of story. I met her at her table, and I thought it would be really awesome to get an autographed photo of the slave girls made out to subspace transmissions.
Yes.
I just thought, we've talked about that episode, we've had a lot of laughs about it, so it seemed appropriate. And I mentioned to her that we talked about Bound on the show and kind of how controversial it was. And then she was like, what's the address for the podcast? I'd like to hear that episode. And I began to get very uncomfortable because I remembered how much we made fun of it. And I was like, oh God, this is not how I want this conversation to go. And I gave like her the address, and she was like following me on Twitter within about 10 seconds. And it was like, oh man. And I think we talked about Bound shortly after, and I was all nervous about it.
But we didn't say anything disparaging about her. I do recall.
I don't think we knew who she was at the time.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, like, yeah. I mean, there's three sisters.
Yeah.
I didn't know who was who.
Yeah.
I believe Saya Batten played the lead sister.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's right.
But didn't Saya Batten bring her 12-year-old daughter with her to the convention?
Yeah.
So I don't know. Do you think the 12-year-old was like a little like freaked out by all these like horny Star Trek fans coming up to not yourself, Cam, not you, but I mean just like other like dudes coming up and like ogling her mother,
possibly? Yeah, I mean I never saw any of these dudes at her table, so I'm but
there,
I would
there wasn't like... a mirror.
Here.
Sorry, I kid.
But you know that autographed photo is now one of my prized possessions.
It's a great one though. It's pretty great. She even had like a good signature. Like what did it say exactly? There's some sort of.
I told her what to write actually. Write "Stay Bound." Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're thinking back to favorite son.
Right. Right.
There
right,
you go.
Yes.
Okay.
What is it with like the light bondage theme of Star Trek episodes?
Well, do you know I have to say so far? Do you know that one of the themes that I've encountered with a lot of these episodes that are on our list is people not being in control of themselves.
Right.
You know, which is, it gives way to camp, but it doesn't give way to a lot of great episodes, in my opinion, you know.
Yeah, I guess like all three of these fantasy episodes is about people out of control.
Yeah.
And I love how like Archer is like covered in sweat this whole episode.
He's buttoning his shirt and everything. I love how Archer essentially wins the day because he's able to overcome just how horny he is. That's really the lesson that Archer learns by the end of it.
Shouldn't, you know, like, there's so many times in the original series where, like, McCoy is stepping in to, like, threaten Kirk. Like, look, I'm going to have to take you out of command because you aren't in a good mental state right now. Why is Phlox never on the bridge like, Archer, you're not working, T'Pol, take over?
Yeah, you know what? I think maybe they kind of address that in season one. Was it Dear Doctor, where Phlox was really uncertain about how ready human species was to take on space exploration?
Right.
The thing is, Phlox is like, he's not a commissioned Starfleet officer, so you kind of get into this weird gray zone. I don't exactly know if Phlox even has the ability to do that, technically.
Because it does seem like there's a point where T'Pol is like, says to Archer, like, you're being, you know, you're acting irrational or whatever. And it's like, in my mind, she should be taking over control of the ship. Like, yes. There should be no question.
Yeah.
And, you know, she should have, you know, backup from Trip or whatever. And there's a scene where, like, Archer wants to, like, shoot, like, basically an innocent ship down. And, like, hurls Mayweather away from the controls when he won't shoot it down. Like, this is a sign of a guy who should not be in command.
And it's weird because by this point, like, she's not with the Vulcan Science Academy or anything like that. She is, you know, I don't know exactly. She's a seconded officer in Starfleet.
Yeah.
Something along those lines. She's got her little Enterprise patch. Yeah. It was cool to see Trip with that Columbia patch on his arm as well, you know?
Yes, I agree. I want to know what you thought of Kelby.
Okay, this is
the engineering the engineer who's being seduced by one of the other Orion girls,
the biggest baby in the world. Let's just be honest. You know, we're like,
Trip's better than me and he's smarter than me and the captain likes him more than I do, but I deserve to be chief engineer.
What are your thoughts on Kelby, Cam?
I'm not surprised he wasn't a major character in the rest of the series. he's pathetic.
Yeah.
Well, he reminded me a little bit of Captain Pike at the start of The Cage.
Sure.
Where he's like curled up on his bed being like, I don't want to be a captain.
But he has great lines though. Like Kelby's, Trip's like, hey, can you fix this? And Kelby's like, I guess I can't do anything right.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh dear. There's also some great lines in this episode, Cam. Such as when Nelvana declares... My, Captain Archer has a very large ship.
I just really like the when Arath Sor, the guy who gives them the Orion slave girls, at the end is like, it is the men that are the slaves, not the women.
Okay, which I can kind of buy, but do you think by the time we get to the 23rd or 24th century, they've discovered some sort of antidote to these pheromones, or are they just, are the Orion girls...
They're ahead of the curve, I guess. Every time they counteract them, they find a new one.
Because I mean, they're enticing. They're always known as very enticing women. So
I mean, the problem with the Orion slave girls is they are pretty much inherently sexist.
Yes,
because they tie back to a time in 1960s culture. You know, with the original series, where I mean, let's not forget in the opening of The Cage, like Captain Pike wants to quit his job and become an Orion like slave dealer.
Yes.
Like, he's the one who's like enticed to like, what is it? Vina is the Orion slave animal woman or whatever she's called or whatever. I think the action figure is called that. And so like...
She's never given a name in The Cage?
Well, Vina is her name.
But... But you said the action figure was named that. Like, was she ever actually officially given a name in The Cage?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's like, I mean, to bring the Orion slave girls into the year, you know, what is it? What year was this episode? 2004? 2005?
No, it was going to be like 2153, Cam. Seriously. No,
I guess 2005, I think, was when this episode aired.
Yeah.
And, you know, we saw the Orions in the Augments arc, too. There's such a throwback kind of sexist idea. I don't know that there's a way to do it. I mean, you saw Rachel Nichols play an Orion girl in the Star Trek 2009, but that's also removing the entire iconic aspect in which the characters were born.
Yeah, but I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine going forward if we just have, you know, just Orion species around. But the idea of the slave girl thing is so outdated.
Well,
there was actually, weirdly, I can't believe I'm going to recommend this, but the episode of Star Trek Continues, the fan film, where they talked about Orion sex slavery. That is actually a really interesting look at the Orions that we never saw in the series. It actually would have been a more, I think, maybe politically correct way to approach them than Bound.
I haven't watched that particular episode of Star Trek Continues.
It's worth watching.
Okay. I'm just surprised, though. I mean, I think the Orion Syndicate was mentioned more often in Deep Space Nine than any other series.
Yeah.
We never saw one single Orion, male or female, featured on Deep Space Nine.
They knew it wasn't worth the...
Yeah, okay.
...the potential firestorm, because this was a controversial episode.
Well, let's go back to Brian Fuller once more. Do you think there's a possibility we could get an Orion featured at some point?
I hope so.
I hope so.
An Orion on the bridge would be cool.
They're so iconic.
Yeah, and I think... There's ground to kind of cover about just other aspects of Orion culture. Because it's kind of like, you know, we've talked about the Klingons, how many of them are warriors in Star Trek. But we don't see, you know, the grander society. I would like to see more of the Orion culture.
Yeah, they can't all be slaves and slave masters, right?
No, that makes no sense.
Yeah. Okay. Well, what's next on Mr. Jordan Hoffman's list?
I just want to say, like, one of my favorite moments is in this episode is near the end where it's like T'Pol and Saya Batten, slave girls, like, regarding each other silently. It's like, yes.
Okay.
T'Pol has won. So let's move from episode 533 out of 695 on Jordan Hoffman's rankings, all the way up to 174.
Really?
And this is the episode Spock's Brain.
Okay.
From the original series, season 3. And here's what Jordan Hoffman has to say. He says, okay, listen. Yes, this is bad. Ridiculous. But funny. Gorgeous space women are hot for Spock's brain, and they steal it. But Bones talks to it via radio. This is the best Star Trek episode to watch while drunk.
See, okay, I think Jordan Hoffman is actually in our zone right now.
Yes.
When we're talking about kind of the best, worst episodes. All the previous five episodes, he did not like those, apparently.
No.
And we at least got some entertainment value out of them.
Mm-hmm.
This is where he's finally saying, oh, okay, I can watch a campy episode and get some entertainment value out of something that's absolutely ridiculous. Cam,
Right. Why
is this on your list, though?
To me, you know, a lot of the original series episodes have camp in them quite strongly. This is the one where they went too far. But to me, this is also, I might actually say, this is the most entertaining episode, I think, out of the six we've talked about today. Because it is full of incident. There's always new developments. There's always things happening. It never feels like it's spinning its wheels. It's committed to this premise that is so batshit crazy. You know, these go-go dancers stealing Spock's brain, and then the word brain being said apparently 37 times throughout the episode.
Okay.
Which makes a great drinking game. But it's like there's new things always happening. You know, there's the discovery of the men on the surface of the planet. Then you get these belts. Then you get like all the stuff dealing with like the teacher, you know, zapping people's, you know, knowledge into their brains. You get the surgery. It's just a lot of bad episodes of Star Trek. You just feel like they're dragging out
something.
This episode is full of stupid ideas, and it's just like one after another.
Perfect surgery done, sealing up all those neural ends in his head to make sure that they could put the brain right back in. That's very convenient.
That scene alone had it like near the top of my list. Purely for Spock, you're like, that's better.
I don't know, yeah, watching, like, dumb McCoy perform surgery on Spock was pretty good.
Yeah, you know. It's great. I mean, and I love, honestly, I could watch a whole episode about Radio Spock. Like, Spock talking to that computer, just, like, narrating what's going on. He is a riot in this episode.
I could watch a whole episode about the crew interacting with cavemen. For some reason.
And come on, just the fact that all these go-go dancing women are called the givers of pain and delight.
Okay, and one thing, maybe I'm just really dumb. I've seen this episode twice at this point.
Yeah.
How did these races continue to procreate if the men and the women were separated?
Whoa. You're putting too much thought into this.
Am I? Okay. I never figured it out.
Maybe the teacher is somehow involved. There was some men down there with the belts on, so maybe...
But I thought... Okay, that's true.
They were the guards, so I mean...
How did the cavemen up on the surface level procreate? Because there are no women the surface.
Maybe this has happened recently?
No, it happened 500 years ago.
I'm just prefer not to think about it. Okay. This is an episode, again, where if you think too much about it, you may have an aneurysm. But, you know, it's iconic for a reason. There's a reason that, like, the Wonder Years spoofed this episode of all the Star Trek episodes.
I was going to bring this up on this, because one of the most iconic scenes from the Wonder Years, to me, is that scene, you know, with Kevin and Paul. They're all dressed up in Star Trek uniforms.
Yeah.
I had no idea that this was a reference to Spock's brain until I actually watched this episode a few years ago, because I think this is... Was this on your Guilty Pleasures list, Cam?
I believe so, yeah.
And so then I was like, wait a minute, this is the Wonder Years with the belts and everything? And
yep.
I was just like, oh, okay, I get it now. So, yes, this is camp at its extreme. It's a fun, dumb episode to watch. You got more entertainment value out of this than any other one we've gone through?
I would say sure, yes. I was laughing a lot in this episode.
I would put this at number 3.
Okay.
For me, I have to go with Sub Rosa.
Right.
After that, I go with Bound.
Mm-hmm.
And then I go Spock's Brain number 3.
Okay.
I don't know, how would you rank them so far?
To me, I would go, I think, Spock's Brain, followed by probably, you know, Sub Rosa revisiting it, like, it kind of catapulted it up my list.
Sure.
So I might actually go Spock's Brain, Bound, and then maybe Sub Rosa, then Favorite Son, then Threshold, then Move Along Home.
Okay. My bottom 3 would be, number 4 would be Threshold, Number five would be Move Along Home, and then number six would be Favorite Son.
Okay.
The bamboo stick fight makes it a pretty close call, sure. I have to say.
Sure, but I mean, do you think Spock's brain has, like, merits? Because, I mean, it's an episode that people, I mean, okay, so talking about, you know, earlier I mentioned the Facebook poll I did. This was the episode that came up the second most. Spock's brain was one that people loved, and I'll tell you, the line that really put it over the top is the brain and brain, what is brain? People quoted that over and over. Actually, Mr. Stocks Lives Van referred to, he said Spock's
brain... Are you sure that's his name? Well, I'm not.
He said Spock's brain is a camp delight. You know, like, people really recognized Spock's brain as being the episode that is maybe just, like, the perfect mixture of sort of bad camp and Star Trek. There's one that they preferred, which we'll mention at the end of the show, but, you know, to me, this is it. Like, this is ground zero for just... I don't know, maybe it's, I find 60s camp far more charming than later camp.
You know, I can totally see the argument for that, because there's a certain degree where the first time you made me watch this episode, it was pretty early on into the run of the podcast, and so I was still working my way through the original series, and I would say by that point I'd probably only seen 25% of the episodes. So I watched this one, I was just like, yeah, it's, you know, kind of like typical 1960s television.
Right.
I think you were a little bit offended. You're like, no, this is camp to the extreme. And then you threw a scarf around your neck and raced out of the room. But rewatching it now, after seeing way more episodes of the original series, where they go in so much more depth about philosophy, a character study. Okay, this is just the stupidest idea in the world. Like, somebody's brain is literally pulled out of his skull.
And they have to turn him into, like, Frankenspock?
Yeah, they're literally using, like, a control pad to make his legs move.
With, I believe, 8 buttons.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, this is camp. This is hilarious.
And the word brain has the same effect as the word bees, where if you say it in lines, it's inherently funny.
Okay, you said it would make for a good drinking game with 37 references.
Yeah.
Cam, okay, listeners, Cam does not drink.
No.
If you've listened to the podcast enough, you can probably tell that I drink.
You're drunk right now.
Yes, sir. How dare you? 37 shots in the course of 1 hour.
Oh, it'll kill you. Yeah, put
it in the hospital.
You gotta skip maybe every second one or whatever.
You say a good drinking game, I say a deadly drinking game.
Maybe every time the word brain comes up in an actual, like, a character, like, refers to the word brain, because sometimes they do it 3 or 4 times per sentence. So, you know, it all adds up.
Fair enough.
Right.
Well, okay, you bring up your question that you posed to fans on Facebook, you know, in one of the big Star Trek groups.
Yeah.
And I was kind of, honestly, I was really annoyed by the reaction that you got, because I was like, really, like, people, you can have critical thoughts about Star Trek, the series.
Yeah.
And it got me kind of bummed out, because I think it's probably the biggest Star Trek group. I'm a part of it. Cam, you got banned from the Star Trek group, did you not?
Yeah.
The only way we've kind of figured it out is that, we were doing, was it our best of the year or something along those?
It was in relation to the Vedic Barayal song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was somebody named Moderator who said that Vedic Barayal is not a beloved character. We should not be talking about him anymore. And then I replied, moderate this.
Yeah.
And a few days later, you were kicked out of the forum.
Yes.
Just coincidence? I have no idea.
I mean, it's a conspiracy theory, but it's the only one that makes sense to me, because I never posted anything even remotely offensive in any way, shape, or form. It was mostly, you know, talking about the podcast or things like that. Maybe spamming? I don't know.
Yeah.
I have no idea. That's the best. That's at least the entertaining version.
Yeah,
of the story.
Sure. Who knows if that's even close to reality.
Yeah.
But anyways, I joined this group at your behest, and I'm now posting links to the podcast in the group. And I do have a little bit of trouble with, like, some of the stuff that proves to be more popular than other posts, because people will post thought-provoking questions and it'll be ignored. So you're getting all this, you know, blowback from just posing a simple question like best bad episodes. And I'm just like, really? So I did a little experiment, because I kind of was annoyed the fact that I would pose, I put a lot of thought into my questions that I'd pose on this group. And then I'd include a link to an episode that was related to my question. Right. And I would get maybe max, maybe 30 to 40 likes. Mm-hmm. The most recent episode that I posted, we got, I kid you not, Cam, it's the saddest turnout ever. We got 3 reactions. Like, 3 people clicked either like or a happy face or an angry. We actually got an angry face.
Right.
This was in relation to the Trekkies episode.
Right.
So then after you were sending me the screen grabs, I was like, okay, well, let me do a little experiment here. All I did is I took a photo of the poster of Star Trek First Contact.
Yeah.
And my entire post consisted of the word Star Trek : First Contact, and I posted the poster.
Yeah.
I am now up to 275 likes, happy faces, hearts, what have you, reactions for 4 words and a colon.
That was an ironic joke.
It was a joke. And so I'm not, look, I get it. I understand why fans, they see a picture of something they recognize and they're like, oh, I know that. I like Star Trek First Contact. I'm going to push like. But it still kind of bothers me in that, like, we can't really have, like, a stimulating critical conversation about a franchise that we're deeply passionate about, mm-hmm. you know, where, or else you get attacked for something that wasn't even offensive to put down in the first place.
And,
you know, so as my little experiment, I wasn't trying, look, if you're one of the blessed listeners that actually pushed like, I'm not disparaging you at all. I understand why you did it, but I'm just like, I just wonder if we can elevate the conversation a little bit here. I'm sorry to get deep and heavy on you guys, but, you know.
It's frustrating. It is. I mean, but you know what? I want to give huge props to all the people that responded to the thread that I started.
Yeah, you did have a good response.
Yeah,
eventually.
And I did. Yeah. So let's just talk about some of the reactions. I said Spock's brain was the second highest number of votes I received for the best, you know, or the best worst episode of Star Trek. The one that won by fairly considerable margin was The Way to Eden from the original series.
Really?
The space hippie episode, which I think I need to revisit because my remembrance of it was that it was actually kind of a dull episode with fun song numbers. So I'm going to revisit it. I think when we get around to doing part 2 at some point in the future, it's an automatic in that we will talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, if the fan reaction is there, let's do it. I've only seen clips of this episode, so I'm looking forward to diving in. You know, while we're on kind of a little bit of a tangent, I should just announce that, you know, Netflix, they've lost their licenses for Star Trek. I've got, you know, some DVDs, I've got some Blu-rays. So I've now joined the process of signing up for a Canadian streaming service known as Crave TV.
Yeah.
I realize most of our listeners are actually from the United States, but I'm just going to rant about this a little bit.
Okay.
I have no choice. You know, look, I'm loading up on Blu-rays for Star Trek The Next Generation. They look gorgeous. I think I'm going to buy the Blu-ray set for TOS, but beyond that, my options aren't really all that great. So I'm watching the streaming services. This Crave TV sucks so much. It's like it's buffering all the time. It's difficult to search through episodes. If you type in Star Trek Voyager, nothing comes up.
Right.
You literally have to type in Star Trek : Voyager for anything to turn up.
Right.
It's very difficult to just like browse through episodes. You have to keep pushing load more episodes. My suspicion though is that Crave TV will eventually gain the license to Star Trek 2017. Mm-hmm. Right now I'm not looking forward to that because Star Trek The Next Generation has been upgraded for HD. I'm looking at the quality on Crave TV. This is standard def.
Right.
This looks like garbage, and like the interface sucks. Cam, I'm really not looking forward to what our options are going to be when it comes to watching Star Trek 2017, because I think it's going to air on Crave TV streaming service if they pull the CBS All Access model. The only hope that I have here, though, is that, of course, we're in Canada, and I'd be shocked, even though CBS, it makes sense for CBS to air it on their actual network once just to promote CBS All Access. Mm-hmm. I don't think any networks in Canada care what CBS's business model is. Like, I really think that it will be broadcast by the networks here in Canada, or at least one network here in Canada. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping we have that option, just watching it right on TV the day it airs. You and I can podcast about it. I think, have we mentioned to the fans? I think maybe that's going to be the idea.
That will be, yeah.
We'll be doing reviews of Star Trek 2017 week by week, our thoughts on every episode.
I think that was the original plan, that we would do that and maybe do... Because this show is based more on the idea of kind of tackling maybe fun, you know, fun ideas. And what we would do is do the episode review and then maybe have like a 15-20 minute section where we talk about maybe an idea for a really funny idea that we knew we could never stretch to an hour.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm really looking forward to the start of 2017. It's going to be a good year for Subspace Transmissions. I don't know. I'm hoping I'm not going to have to rely on Crave TV. Cam, Star Trek 2017, if it's on Crave TV and Crave TV alone, are you subscribing?
I don't know.
Okay.
I'll cross that bridge when I come to it.
You're like, Tyler, I'm at your house every day to catch up on Star Trek.
I might as well if we're podcasting about it.
Exactly.
So before we close, I want to give a couple other shout outs to some of the people that commented on the Facebook post with some of their episodes that they thought were the best worst episodes. So Ralph actually gave a list for every series. What he picked was the best worst episode of each series. So he, for the original series, says Spock's Brain. For TNG, he said The Naked Now.
Okay.
For DS9, he said Profit and Lace.
You and I will argue against that, but I appreciate him trying.
Mm-hmm. Voyager, he had The Disease, which is a very enjoyable episode as well.
Sure.
Another awkward Harry Kim sexual episode.
Yes.
And Enterprise, he had Unexpected. Which is a little more polarizing.
Well, John Ralph, as Cam calls you. I totally appreciate that. Very thoughtful response, and I do appreciate that.
And then Kelly had this to say. He chose The Alternative Factor, which is one of my most hated episodes of all Star Trek.
Okay.
But he said, the most practical, I guess, would be The Alternative Factor, since each fight scene lasts just long enough for me to get a drink from the fridge.
Yeah, fair enough.
So, And then Josh, who just referenced, he said Fistful of Data's was his pick.
That could make our list potentially in the next, in part two of this.
Maybe. And then someone named Fred, he had an interesting pick. He said Next Generation from season 8 on, with 20 exclamation points after that.
From season 8 on?
Season 8 on.
Well, Fred, right said, I appreciate that as well.
Yeah. Yeah, season 8, man, it wasn't good.
Is he talking about the Twitter account?
I don't know.
Okay, there is a Twitter account called Star Trek Next Generation Season 8. It's actually pretty funny.
Well, apparently that is the best worst Star Trek of all time.
Well, mission accomplished for that Twitter account.
Okay, so I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Send your picks for the best worst Star Trek episodes. Heck, nominate some for us to cover when we do part two down the road.
Yeah, and you know what? Next week, we're going to be tackling a very topical issue here.
Mm-hmm.
Father's Day, Cam.
Yeah, we skipped Mother's Day.
Yeah, we kind of feel like jerks, but we'll get around to it next year, we promise.
Sure.
This is going to be about fathers in the final frontier, essentially tackling all the daddy issues that it seems every single main character has on Star Trek.
Yeah, it's very true.
You can also go to iTunes, give us 5 stars, leave us a review. We'll read it aloud on the show. And look, guys, it's a free podcast. We're not asking for much. 5 stars, that's all we're asking for here.
Okay. You can also reach us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam V as in Va Va Voom for Patrick Fabian Smith.
You can find me at Reporton. That's REPORTON. N as in Navor, the Orion slave girl.
Okay, so until next time, the Orion is closed.
Complete.
That's better.